The rain report for September 5, 2014 follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the not-so-posh studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, with this rain report.
We're hams. We should be good communicators, but it's quite ironic that most of the time our problems result from not communicating well enough.
That's Mike Corey, KI1U, the Emergency Preparedness Manager for the ARRL, Amateur Radio's national organization. There are many who believe public service is the cornerstone of the amateur radio service. Mike Corey does, too. While his observations are his, they reflect those of many folks in amateur radio who are majorly concerned about its long-term viability. This is our second and final excerpt from his 2014 Dayton Hamvention talk, entitled The Served Community.
Getting the most of the amateur radio network. So how do we implement this? This is who you start with. I'll be there when you need me. Engage them when they make that statement. Don't wait for them to show up later. The VOAD community has a nice term for this called SUVs. Spontaneous unrequested volunteers. Have a plan for dealing with them. Don't turn them away. What you may not know about them is that they may actually have a background that can help you out. And a case that I seen in the Tuscaloosa tornado, it was something that probably one of the most memorable things I've ever seen out in the field. This guy showed up at a temporary EOC, shows up in a red Corvette convertible, 60s model Corvette convertible. You show up at a disaster scene in a Corvette, you kind of stand out. I said, who is this guy? He goes, well, I really don't know him all that well. He's a local ham, but he came out of the woodwork. And as they said, they all the hams came out of the woodwork in Tuscaloosa for this event. He said, but he just lost everything. That car is the only thing he has left. His house was destroyed in the tornado. He's there for therapeutic value. Plug him in, put him to use, because he's going to need it. He needs something to do to keep his mind off the fact that he just lost everything. So don't turn these folks away. You don't know why they showed up when they did. You don't know their background, but find them something to do. But if they come to you ahead of time, engage them and figure out what they can do for you. Make the most of the home stations. I'm going to have to go back to the Tuscaloosa tornado again. I'll never forget a conversation I had with the Alabama SEC, and I was playing phone tag with him the entire way over there. I was in Mississippi. I was driving over to Tuscaloosa, and I could tell he was manning about five phones simultaneously because it sounded like he was all over the place. I made some comment to the effect of, okay, if you're at the state EOC, can you get a message to you? He goes, oh, no, I'm not at the state EOC. You're not? Why? He goes, well, I can talk to the state EOC easily. He goes, but quite frankly, I got a better station at home than they have there. That's something we got to look at. These home stations, as I mentioned, the guy in Texas with a 110-foot tower and a 40-meter beam, these are resources. You know, a lot of times we get very closely linked with emergency management. Emergency management is very much about resource management. We need to do the same thing as hams. Manage our resources. Our resources, that's the amateur radio community. It's not just a small segment. It's not just 5 or 10%. Partner with your community organizations, the COADs. I just met with an emergency manager in Indiana who's brand new on the job, and I said, is there a COAD or a local VOAD going? And she said, no. I said, while you're not technically a VOAD, because emergency management would be considered the professional side, I said, you can be the catalyst to help get one going. Go to the Red Cross, Salvation Army. Go to the churches in the community. Go to any place that's going to rely on volunteers. Get them all at the same table every once in a while. It could be as simple as just going out for breakfast every couple months. Hams can do that too. If there's not a COAD or a local VOAD in the area, be the catalyst. Help get that going. Help get all these partners at the table together every once in a while. You're going to be working side by side when disaster strikes. It's best to be friends before disaster strikes. I mentioned charging stations. Hurricane Irene that came up through New England a couple years ago. One of the success stories from that was in Danbury, Connecticut, in the western part of the state, where a grocery store were able to maintain power, got the word out to the community, says, come by the store, we've got charging strips set up, plug in your device, get it charged up, we'll even give you a cup of coffee. And the store manager was making announcements over the PA on any news bits that everybody needed to know. You know, you've got a good resource for this in a lot of areas where you have social organizations, Elks, Knights of Columbus, Moose, whatever. American Legion, and American Legion is a partner of the ARRL. Work with these folks. You got volunteers there, you got a facility, you've got power. Most of the members probably have generators. Create the partnership to get these charging stations going in your community. Work with the PIOs to get the word out to the community. This resource is available in a disaster. And as hams, charging stations. This is right up our alley. This is a technology thing that we can be helping with. Big trend right now, ad hoc Wi-Fi networks, mesh networks. This is becoming the big hot button item. I know the guys out in Colorado have got a system going that is just incredible now. Guys in Texas, I'm hoping that we'll start the works in developing a book on basic mesh networking for amateur radio. Because right now, there's a lot of material out there, but it's written by experts for experts. Those that don't have a networking or IT background are quickly lost in the process. So we're hoping to get this as a resource available soon. The league has also been working with the Berkman Center, which is a cyber law center at Harvard, on developing mesh technologies that can be used by the public during disasters. So we're looking at avenues there as well. And if we identify some solutions, we're trying to get amateur radio operators to be part of those solutions in disaster areas and setting these networks up. Neighborhood information point. That's one of the best things we can do. You have a tower. You have an antenna. It should be a symbol to your neighbors that, hey, this guy may know something about what's going on. The home station can be a local information point in the neighborhood. And social media specialists. Somebody asked me a while back, how do we get youth involved in amateur radio, particularly in public service? There's your answer. While most of us are probably at an age at or above the point where we can adapt to social media quickly and easily, the 18 to 30 crowd, this is their specialty. They are all over social media and they know everything about hashtags and Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and you name it. Use that. Use that as an avenue in. Get them to be your Aries group or your club's social media specialist. And in that process, they're going to be learning more and more about amateur radio because they're going to be bragging about what your group is doing on social media. There's now a concept, the VOST, the Virtual Operations Support Team, basically a response team. You can go to VOSG, which is Virtual Operations Support Group. .us, and there is a ton of information there, and a PIC for the league in Oklahoma, Lloyd Colston, is heavily involved with the VOST program. There's volunteers out there that will manage your social media presence 24/7 during a disaster. They'll even keep an eye on it that if people are saying something bad about you, they'll fix it. They did that with National VOAD during Hurricane Sandy. National VOAD office in Arlington went kind of quiet for a day or two. People started going, you call yourself a disaster organization and you're not even saying anything. The social media team got in there, found everybody that was making a negative comment and personally responded to each one. Sorry, we've been kind of quiet. Things have been busy. This is what we're doing. The opinion changed. It went from 80% negative down to about 20% negative overnight. And this team, it's virtual, so it is worldwide. That way they can monitor 24 hours a day. By just shifting which volunteer is handling those duties. Don't underestimate it. There are lots of tools out there. I've named them individually. Tools like Hootsuite, where you can simultaneously monitor multiple social media threads. We use this at headquarters. If I send something out, I've got a work Facebook page, kind of the official league one. We've got the Aries Twitter feed, LinkedIn, and so on. I can blast one message out, and it goes to everything simultaneously. Hootsuite, HOOTSUITE. Use it for the information going out to your group. Building a web page can be a real pain in the butt, but getting a Facebook page going for your group or a Twitter feed is very easy, relatively speaking. It's the source for information coming in. It's enough of a problem now for emergency management. They've created a social media for emergency management training course through FEMA's EMI. The Red Cross has even created one on social media and disaster response. Social media is information overload. This is the fire hose of information coming in. As communicators, we need to be looking at how to take this fire hose and get the practical, real, useful information during a disaster down to a trickle, so that way those that we're assisting to make the decisions in the disaster are better equipped by this information coming in. Know how to separate the wheat from the chaff. There's a lot of information coming in. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. During Sandy, FEMA set up a rumor control page just for all the information coming in and dispelling anything that was being said as this is true, this is not true, and so on. I mentioned the aggregator of Hootsuite. There's another one I think called TweetDeck that will help you manage a Twitter. Make regular use out of it. As hams, we know this, and I keep preaching this to everybody I talk to. You get somebody who says, I got my license in case there's an emergency. Great, but you're going to be useless in an emergency because you won't know what to do with radio when it happens. But social media is the exact same way. It's useful if you make regular use of it.
You're listening to the thoughts and concerns of Mike Corey, KI1U, ARRL Emergency Preparedness Manager. We'll conclude this second excerpt from his 2014 Dayton Hamvention talk in a moment. This is the Rain Report, heard in Chicago on the NS9RC440 repeater Thursday night net at 8 p.m. on 442-725 MHz and via Twitter at #TheRainReport.
You're listening to The Rain Report from www.therainreport.com.
Know your hashtags. If you don't know what a hashtag is, ask a 16-year-old. They can tell you all about them. I found out very quickly when I got to headquarters. Years ago, it used to be the FCC would declare something as a communications emergency and say, this frequency is being used, don't use it, so on. They don't do that anymore. It's just not part of the response. So what we do is, if there is the typhoon in the Philippines, I contact my counterpart with Para. He says, we're using these frequencies. Of course, I'm only looking for the HF ones because we're looking at which ones could have worldwide propagation potential. We used to put them out on the website. My guess would probably be that, say, we have about 160,000 members. We put it on the website within a day. Maybe 10% of the members will see that. Maybe there's really no way to tell. But I put it out on Twitter. Instantly, the 7,400 people following that feed see it. And there's two people on there that if they retweet it, those two people being Craig Fugate and Jim Cantore from the Weather Channel, if they retweet it, our audience, just by two people, increased to over 250,000 viewers. So setting it up, the first step is talking to folks, reaching out to the contesters, the DXers, rag chewers, and every active ham in your community. You better be on a good terms with them because you're going to need them. In a major disaster, you're going to need everybody on board. I like the term all hams on deck. You're going to need these folks to be there. Who to involve? The amateur radio community. I am a big proponent of the idea that amateur radio as a whole is a public service, not just Aries, Races, Mars, whatever. The amateur radio service is an asset, and that's something we have to communicate more now to the public than ever, not just the served agencies. For where are the served community stations? Identify them. Map them out. Make that information available in the EOC, National Weather Service office, wherever they may be at. National Weather Service is a good example. Sometimes they need critical data from a specific location. You may not be able to get somebody there, but there may be a DXer there that can probably give you some information. And with a few exceptions, I have found that if you call a ham up, and I always say, you've got an instant friend with a call sign. You run into somebody with a call sign, you've already got a common bond. You call somebody up and say, hey, I need you to help me out with this. I need to know, is the street flooding in your neighborhood? Most times they will be willing to help, but only if you reach out to them. Because if they think that your attitude is, well, that guy didn't have ICS training, so he's no use to me, then he's going to behave like he's no use to you. This is the message you communicate to them. This is what I need from you when a disaster strikes, an emergency strikes. Don't put all the demands on them. Don't go, well, you got to have this course and this course and this course and this course. If I call you up and I've got a request for information, or I've got information that you may be able to help distribute, maybe you just need somebody that can say, hey, we've got this club email account, and the word's kind of gotten out that folks can email the club if they need some information. Could you just man that for us for the next couple hours? Give them a very concrete, simple task, and they'll probably be very willing to help you out. You set this up way ahead of time. A blue sky day is the day to start setting up your served community stations. Work with them, build the relationships, build the network in your local area. And you got to keep it going. It's very easy to lose momentum on things. And there can be some unintended consequences. First step, get your tools together. QRZ, league website, whatever you got to identify the guys in your area. You're not on a recruiting drive. So don't say you need to join Aries, you need to do this, you need to do that. Because you're looking for a resource for you, not somebody that may be put off by all the demands you're going to throw at them right out of the gate. You're going to get objections. You're going to get that guy that says, I don't work with MCOM guys. Have a plan, and don't get mad when you hear this. This is when you need to turn on the charm. This is when you need to be a good salesperson. And it may require some outside-the-box thinking. We've gotten ourselves very conditioned. This is the way we do it. This is the way we've always done it. And this is the way it's got to be. You've got to think outside the box when it comes to dealing with folks that are probably going to object to you approaching them in the first place about emergency preparedness, disasters, and such. And start working on it before the disaster. This is what a served community station looks like. It's just a basic ham station. You're driving around, you see a tower in your neighborhood, you know, I have never noticed that before. Find out who these folks are. This is the served community station. He's active. It's a solid, resilient station. You got good people skills. I've often said, we can't rely on 100% of hams to be part of this. If you were a jerk before you got your license, you're still a jerk after you got your license. You've got to have good operating skills. And I'll tell you, and that only comes by getting on the air. If you don't get on the air that often, your skills will suffer. going to have good technical skills. They have to know station building. They have to know propagation. They've got to be a good communicator. We're hams. We should be good communicators, but it's quite ironic that most of the time our problems result from not communicating well enough. So who to involve? DXers and contesters. These are the powerhouse stations in your area. These are the guys that have the big antenna arrays, high power, top-of-the-line transceivers. They know every inch of their station from start to finish. College clubs. This is a huge resource. If you've got a college club in your area and you've got a general interest club in your area, partner up. Adopt a college club. There are college clubs around the country that don't have a general interest club nearby that could use a little additional support. It doesn't have to be down the road. It could be in another state. It also helps engage an age group that typically will lose interest in amateur radio. Right out of college, life has a lot of demands. If you keep them engaged and you get them involved in community service and public service, we're more likely to keep them active as they get older in the hobby. VHF, UHF groups. So much of what we do in public service is in the VHF, UHF part of the spectrum. These are the groups you really want to partner with because they're going to have some technical skills and operating skills that you could really use. They also have a very intimate knowledge of the terrain in the area. That's so much a part of VHF, UHF propagation. Of course, the local general interest clubs. When I was an EC in Mississippi, the general interest club and the Aries group were really just one and the same. So in some areas that happens. Where you have two separate groups, and of course, as we all know, where there are three hams, there are two clubs. You get those groups all playing on the same page together. As I mentioned, that other club, get them involved. I'm also part of a group called YCCC, Yankee Clipper Contest Club. Several hundred, maybe even more members. You can look at contest clubs and going, okay, you know, all they do is just get on the air and create a bunch of QRM on contest weekends. But that's a lot of people with a lot of other skill sets that you may be able to utilize. On top of that, there are some contesters that if you want to build your HF operating skills or VHF operating skills, there's a thing called multi-opping, and they may let you in their station and play a little during a contest. There are the casual contesters that would be willing to say, hey, you know, come over, operate for a little bit in the contest. I'll show you the ropes. We may learn something. And I know that's a dangerous thing.
The observations of Mike Corey, KI1U, Emergency Preparedness Manager for the ARRL, from his 2014 Dayton Hamvention talk entitled The Served Community. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2014 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, bidding you a very 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, on the web at www.therainreport.com.